It's Binky, B-I-N-K-Y, Lion, L-Y-O-N. I was born in Lima, Ohio. And I lived there for 15 and a half years and moved. My mother was remarried. She was a single mom. She got remarried and we moved to Caledonia. No, my stepdad had taken a job from the Lima Memorial Hospital to Marion Power Shovel as a computer person. And so then they decided they were going to get, you know, he was leaving Lima and they decided they were going to get married. And he was looking at different places over this way, you know, over in Marion. And they come across the place on South Elm, which Mel Hissong built. And they bought that place. And that's where we started the whole Caledonia thing, which was a major culture shock from Lima, Ohio, especially in the 70s. Right. But the thing about Lima was my family, my mother, and I never really understood this, but it always happened. When my mom and my real dad were divorced, which I was like 10, my mom had 4, 5 sisters, and my Aunt Ava, who's like a second mom to me, no matter, this is really crazy. When my Aunt Ava and my Uncle Harold moved on the west side of Lima, my mom started renting like apartments and houses, and we moved across the street from them. And then when they moved on down the 1200 block in Lima, of West Wayne Street, we followed. I don't know, but we followed. And so we were all very, very close knit. My aunt had 4 kids and of course us 3, and we were just totally inseparable. And my Aunt Ava's like my second mom. So I was from the 70s. So when I came, I mean, I was like full-fledged hippie. When I came to Caledonia, that was a major culture shock because everybody here looked like something from the movie Grease, or they were farmers, you know, there was no hippies. And actually the only hippie that I did come across, and he had long hair, was my Mike. Well, my whole surrounding in Lima, I am like, and I still am, a major music freak. And back in the day, you know, back in the 70s, well, before that, my grandfather was a jazz drummer. And so I was this is my real dad's dad. And I really weren't with the people that long because of the divorce and that, but I was always around the coolest music, you know, and from jazz into whatever. Well, when this whole, and it's my parents' fault, when this whole Beatle era took effect on the Ed Sullivan Show, which I was very young, I fell in love with the Beatles. And I'm still, I've got half of my upper top of me is Beatle tattoos. But anyway, all of my friends that I hung out with, we were just clicking with this whole thinking it was cool, this hippie stuff, you know, this bohemian thing was just, Earth People was just the way to go, you know? And this is the other incentive that I had for the Fantastic Friday was when I was 15 and 16 years old, my mom allowed me to go to this venue in Lima, and it was called the Ballroom. And it was a youth area of where professional bands went, which was like a dream for me. And I would go there on Friday or Saturday nights and listen to music. And of course, back in the day with that, you also were allowed to, you know, the parks would have music and, you know, you go all day to like a little concert and that, but music's just, that the whole hippie thing is, that's where I was at with it. I fell in love with it. I got a lot of attention over it. Well, they thought I was like, whoa, you know, it was like, who is this person? At the beginning, it was kind of like a foreign student or something, you know what I mean? It was like, And of course, making friends and that, you know, I come in, my hair's long, I'm wearing bohemian clothes, I've got the embroidered bag, and, you know, and you had to wear dresses back then, you couldn't wear. But I was the first one to come to River Valley with a pair of bell bottoms on when we were allowed to wear pants. And that's when I became the key person, okay? They thought I was the coolest thing going. Actually, I think about this after raising my kids, and I'm thinking, it was no wonder I was like, ugh. I went to River Valley my junior year, 71. It really saved my life because I was wanting to experiment things in Lima, and it was a good thing I got out of there. It was a very quiet town. Now, mind you, you know, I could go to the square of Lima, and you had all these department stores and all these different things. And I go in the square of Caledonia, and you got your grocery stores, a library, a pizza place. I mean, it was like, this was like, is this for real? You know what I mean? It was weird. It was weird. But Merv Stafford and his brother, in the corner of the square where your grandma's store and the beauty shop and all that wasn't on that corner. Well, what's being repaired right now, in that little area there was him and his brother did a pizza shop, and they would have things out on the square for the kids. Yeah, they did, like, they'd hook up music and, you know, and all the kids would hang out and everything. That's basically the one time I saw Mike, because he was like tie-dyed flag t-shirt and long hair, and I'm like, well, there's a familiar person I should know. Mike's 3 years older than me, and honestly, that was the only thing to do, you know, in Caledonia. It was like, whoa, okay. It was kind of like the farmer's market. It was like a bunch of people on the square. I'm thinking that there were times the guys did have their cars parked over, like, by Carol's old place, you know? Like, they'd have cars parked over that way. And I do know that the guys, Mike, Delbert Finley, and a lot of them would customize their cars, and they would sit up in the square. And that was about the entertainment, mostly, was just sitting up in the square. This is like Mike had a 60-something Bonneville, Pontiac Bonneville, put Craigers on it, and, you know, done it up, add some chrome to the engine and stuff like that. Yeah, and then they go out on Caledonia Northern and race, but I didn't say that. But it was a whole different world. I was majorly into art too. I did a lot of self-portraits. I did a lot of abstracts. I spent many hours when I did live in Lima. I, like I told you, with the music, I read Rolling Stone and Circus magazines and all these. And I would do these collages. I would cut all the, whoever was my rock star, you know, and cut out pictures and make a design on a poster board. And my friends just went nuts that I was always making somebody something, you know. And even when I went to River Valley, I did a lot of my own thing of candle making, and I would actually, Mike and I did it. I mean, we would go outside, be outside, and cut the grass out on the ground and get the dirt and pour wax in and make all different colored candles and stuff. And I batiked. I did a lot of batiking. Do you know what batique is? I didn't really do it a lot then. Basically, what it is when you tie-dye, which I did loads of tie-dye, when you tie-dyed, instead of using rubber bands, you would use hot wax. It is pretty cool, but it's lengthy, you know, it's lengthy. And don't even ask me how I come up with it, because I really don't know. But we did a lot of that, and like I said, I did a lot of tie-dyeing, and I took a lot of art school different art classes in Lima at the Art Center. I absolutely loved it there. And to get back on, I was going to be an art teacher. And I got into, you know, I went out to the branch here in Marion, and I got this phobia of tests and different things, head over heels over Mike Lyon, and I just didn't think it was a need for me to go to school. Yeah, at the beginning, before Mike, I'm moving back to Lima with my Aunt Ava. I can't do this. This is nuts. You know, yeah, it was a real struggle. I really had a time adjusting, I should say. But then it was fine. I made friends and everything. But I, you know, I had a little bit of the anxiety thing. I think that's just in my genes. I have that sometimes anyway. But at that time, yeah, that I decided school wasn't for me. I guess it was kind of like I had someone on my level, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, okay, the things I liked, he liked. And so, yeah, we actually talked, and I was homesick for Lima, and I was sitting on the front step of the Methodist Church in Caledonia, and he went past, and he saw me, which I don't remember if I did see him or not, but he saw me. And then, of course, like I told you, the square thing, you know, the dance and that up in the square and that, and we started talking. I just thought that was crazy, you know, just crazy. I went back to Lima because my uncle, my Aunt Ava's husband, and it blows my mind, they were like 35. He was like Grizzly Adams. I mean, he hunted, he did all these things, you know, was retired from the military. He was a cook, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like the key figure guy in my life, because I didn't really have too much to do with my real dad. And he ended up passing away from leukemia, and that was my senior year. That was my first of knowing someone, you know, loving someone, and a shock of him just deteriorating. He worked for Eastman Kodak in Lima and developed pictures. He was an incredible photographer. That's the other thing I did too. I did a lot of photography. He was an incredible photographer. And of course I fell in love with him because he came home one day, said he had something for me, and he handed me a manila envelope. And one of the customers had pictures developed, and they were actually a press conference, a black and white 8x10 Beatles. And I still have them. I still have them. And I remember him telling me, it was like a summer day, and I remember him saying, I have something for you, but you can't say, you know, like I can't say that he gave them to me or whatever at that time. And I'm like, okay. And I opened them, and it were individual 8x10 of the Beatles. And I'm like, ugh. And I still have them. Yeah, so I did a lot of things. But then, of not going to school and that, I ended up working at a subscription company. Everybody went to fulfillment in Marion. I worked there for quite a while, got computer training and, you know, a lot of clerical stuff. And so I did that. And I did that for like 4 years, I think. And then I was 20, 21 when we got married. And then, of course, 5 years later, I had Meg. But any concert I've been to, any of that, we did it. You know, it was crazy. Oh yeah, he's Lion. He your family and his family. He had Lion Market before Reese's Market. That was Mike's mom and dad. And then, of course, when I went over and started working at for Warren Delaney, you know, it was IGA. It was Sickles' place at the time or whatever from years back. You know, I loved it. I loved working in that store. And Warren wanted, you know, he says, now you guys are young and you have babies and it's not really a good move. He goes, because it takes so many years to actually make a profit. But his mom and dad were dying. They were like, you are not going to buy a store. We went through that for how many years? 24/7, blah, 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 you know. before Warren, it was Sickle. No, I would say, I'm going to say, Warren, your grandpa, your he had Reese's, then Sickle had IGA, and Sickle sold IGA to Delaney. No, I had babies and was babysitting a friend of mine's baby, and then I got with Warren or something. I can't even remember, and I started working there. Like 2007 or 80-something. You walked in. He would change it a lot. Like, you would walk in the door, and the counter was, like, right to the left.
This is, like, the front door through those columns?
Yeah, yeah. And, like if you walk through the columns, one point there was, like, a little counter to the left. Like, it had the pen and candy and stuff, you know. You could go there. And then down that aisle was, like, how your grandma and grandpa's was. Like, you got the freezer and the, you know, the refrigerated area and that. And then to the far, you're in it, and to the far right, he had his meat counter. But it was just aisles. You guys, the store's bigger. And, but it was just aisle and aisle of different, you know, the canned goods and whatnot. And then in the back, there was like the storage room and that. Oh yeah, you could, now Mike's mom and dad at the Reese's store, they had a little table set up back by the meat counter. They'd have a round table set up, and the guys would come in and drink coffee, have sandwiches and stuff after they farmed and stuff. And the IGA, you know, Warren knew a lot of people, and you found them more or less hanging on the meat counter discussing, you know, what was going on and that. I mean, it was kind of funny because people would shop there and they'd shop at Reese's, you know. It was funny. They did get a lot of business because you have to stop and think about it. Some of that back in the day, 309 wasn't even there, you know, like the things weren't even developed yet. And, Mike's dad told me when he was growing up that there was like a bakery there. There was, I believe he said, well, of course, there were two hardwares, I guess, two hardware stores. But he said that they, you know, back in the day, it was like a butcher shop. And, I mean, it was a thriving community, you know. It was crazy. It was just starting. And you could see, you know, and you got people talking to you going, I just hate doing this, but the prices are like night and day, you know. And I'm like, you got to do what you got to do, you know. But like with Reese's, my thing was Jack's meat. You just couldn't beat it, you know. I didn't care how much it was. I would go to Jack and get the meat and that. I mean, I was so tight with Jack that I'd walk in and he'd have my sandwich for lunch ready. My order was Dutch loaf, sandwich, Swiss cheese on wheat. And he'd say, coming up. He goes, I got you. I'm like, okay. The usual. And I'd say, you got it. Dutch loaf was your old fashioned loaf. Kind of a mixture of ham and it's just really good. Look up old fashioned loaf. I don't think they call it Dutch loaf anymore. Well, see, it started that, you know, it started out like, oh, you can't beat the price, blah, blah, blah. But then they were saying that it was starting to hurt. You know, like, ooh, wait a minute. And I saw it from the beginning, and I'm like, mm-mm, I'm getting my meat where I'm getting my meat, and I'm doing my thing, you know. Even with me working in Marion, I would still come home and get, you know, you just like that. My aunts over in Lima, when they would come to visit, loved going in that store. They never witnessed anything like that since they were a little girl at Reese's. And they'd say, well, we just love Jack, you know, and Jack had, my Aunt Ava would come in, Jack would have her Colby cheese ready. It was an absolute novelty. You didn't go in a place where he's got a big old wheel of Colby covered on plastic, and he takes his butcher knife and cuts it and wraps it up. I mean, you're just in awe. It's almost like, whoa. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you, the other place that's kind of similar to that is Phil's Deli in Galleon. Whenever you're buying stuff there, their meats and things, they kind of do that same thing. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Warren sold it, and I can't think of her name. Chris. Oh, shoot, I can't think of her last name. Bought it from her, and I worked there with her, but I didn't stay there very long because that was not run properly, and I was like, I'm out. Yeah, I think it was in the latter part of the 90s because the whole Fantastic Friday thing started seeing kids in the square and whatnot, you know. And I'm thinking, I talked to one of my buddies, Kevin Landis, was one of my helpers, who at the time was 16. And he said he was thinking it was like 86, 87 when we started it. And I said, yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. But I think April, I think if you look in the minutes of, I don't know how far back they kept things, but going to council, you know, to get permission to use the town hall and that, there's dates on that. Not well, the happening. First thing that was happening was the Firemen's Festival. The firemen put it on, and you would go out to the Lions Club Park, and they would do water fights. You know, take the hoses and kind of mow each other down with it. You know, they had teams and stuff. But the square itself, they'd have, like, little things set up for the kids to do. And, you know, like, fish, those fishing things, you know, like, what do you call it? Like, go fish or something. And you put it over and you can pull out a prize. But they had different things like that. The Farmers Festival was the one where it turned into rides and everything. I think maybe 5 or 6 years, possibly, maybe a little longer. But it went. I mean it went from having the rides in the square, which blew my mind because they were full size rides. Well, not Ferris wheels, but it would be like Scrambler in the square, in the corner there by your grandma and grandpa's, you know, the beauty shop, and at that corner they'd have like a Scrambler in there, and then they have a big tent by the town hall, and they'd have their beer garden, and you know, the auctions were just unbelievable. They would have auctions and people would come in and bring baked goods. The farmers would be selling cast iron toys, John Deere, you know, whatever. But the one I loved was like Short and D down here on the highway was the restaurant. They would battle the owners, Warren. I watched Warren Delaney one time buy a daggone apple pie for like $100. They would outbid each other. You know, they go. And then, you know, all of the proceeds would go back, you know, to the village and that, but it was funny. It was funny. There wasn't anything going on. That was the problem. There wasn't anything. I think what it was everybody was kind of like, remember back in the day when they used to do. And like I said, Mark Cole was the minister at the Methodist Church, and he approached me and said, what do you think of having like a youth gathering up in the town hall for the kids? You know, they could come up and, you know, be different things to do. And I said, honestly, Mark, I think it's a good idea, but I think you're not going to get what you want because kids seem to shy away of anything with church, especially if they'd have to get up and say a prayer or something. I said, you know, maybe if you can approach it like a youth group type thing, like a youth center type thing. And so he started it, I think on Saturday, he started it. And they bring a little TV up and do some games and different things. And then, of course, somehow I got hooked into it. And I decided that we would do Fridays. Mark Cole, O-A-L, wait a minute, C-O-A-L-E. Mark Cole. I think he just liked my outgoingness and how I was involved in different things, you know, or Mike and I would step up and say we would help, you know. Point was mayor. I never did. He did. Council, mayor. I mean, I'm on zoning now, but, you know, but yeah, we've always been involved in the village. That's why I'm the old lady and I kind of sit back now. And like I told you about the ballroom in Lima, that was my incentive. That's what I witnessed that. And those were, and we were older, you know, it wasn't little kids. And I said, you know, I'm looking at my kids, Meg and Sari, I'm looking at them. And, you know, I coached basketball, we did T-ball, you know, the girls did do different things. But I got to know a lot of these kids in the village that couldn't afford to do anything. Yeah, they'd come in the grocery store, you know, and talk and, you know, come home from school and different things, you know. And I thought, well, what about the elementary age? Which that was my Sari at that time and Meg, they're 16 months apart. And I thought, well, especially when Mark was talking about it, I thought, well, I don't want to be away from my kids. So why don't we start with an age group, which we started with kindergarten to sixth grade, from 7 to 9, and then after that, we did 9:30 to 11 for the junior high and the high school kids. I want to tell you something. The first time we did this and announced it, you know, that we were doing this, they were wrapped around the building. I at some times would have 200 kids up in that town hall. The majority were from Caledonia or River Valley School. There were some, we had that problem. I mean, I never turned any kids down. You know, like if there was some tiff, because if for some reason it was always Cardington. I was like, dude, are you serious? You know, and every, you know, they would come up and we had rules. I had a poster board with rules and the kids would, I'd have all these kids and we would recite these rules. They were not allowed to leave the building without their parents. It wasn't an in and out deal. You were there, or your parents had to come and get you, you know, come up and get you. You didn't get to hang outside the building or anything like that. Like I said at the beginning, we kind of had like a little turntable on different things, but as it grew, the village loved what we were doing. I would have donations. I actually had a full sound system that I DJ'd up there with those kids. I did a lot of legwork, a lot of PR, and I had Pepsi, come up. Brought in a refrigerator, brought in the pop machine, you know, to pump, to pour the pop and all that, you know, I can't even think of what you call it. And, fountain, they had the fountain, it just took off. And I had the pizza, the kids had pop, they had pizza. I got with a friend of mine from Wyandotte, they donated all the snacks. Sometimes if the kids, how do I want to say this? They ate their lunch at school and sometimes they didn't have what they needed at dinner. And on Fridays they were fed every Friday. Almost, I think it was like 15 years, all volunteer. I got with vendors. They brought Pac-Man machine. They brought Space Invaders. They brought, you know, like those video games. We had those. We had basketball shootout. We had air hockey. We had pool table and ping pong. They owned the video machines, but they allowed us, you know, to use them. The Edison Billiards donated a pool table. Mike and I went down to Columbus, and we bought the air hockey table. I mean, we were constantly going and trying to do something, you know. And then I did, like I said, one of the parents were DJs in Caledonia years ago, and they ended up giving us the sound system, and so we ran the sound system. There were a couple of guys that, let's see, George and Gary Gray were riding. They rode bicycles, and I think they went from here to Chicago or something, and they ended up handing us a check, and we went out and bought lights for the stage. And, but yeah, I mean, and going through Caledonia or whatever, it was always, oh, there's those do-getters. There's those good ones that's done whatever, you know. Legion would get involved. The whole village was involved. And I'm telling you, Caledonia, and I laugh now because I sit in these zoning meetings and are like, we're only going to allow so many minutes for parking. And then I'm thinking, dude, do you not remember what Fridays? It was like you were in Chicago or New York with pants. Think about it. You got kids. They now have two kids. They got their cars. You got cars bumper to bumper dropping off kids and picking them up. You couldn't even get through the square. Oh, and I also, several times a month, we had fire drills. When you're standing in the square and you're looking, it's like right alongside by the railroad track on that side of the building. Like Main Street, it's on the right side there by the, where Jerry does her work and that. There is a fire escape there. So we would have fire drills. We had Russ Rigney, that was the sheriff at the time, and they had the DARE program at the school. He would come up and we would do things. He would get like t-shirts and we'd do little dance contests. We do all kinds of stuff, you know, to get the kids going. And he'd come up and help and maybe show like a little video of a DARE program and that. I mean, we tried to keep current everything that was happening. Yeah, it was 2000 something.
Wow.
It was a nightclub that I ran. Yeah. It was, well, when we were, you know, they come in, and I'll tell you the other thing, too, and I'm sure you know this. If you use the word kids, that's a golden ticket for grants and whatever. The kids are involved. And so they put new windows in the town hall. Yes, they were going by, what, you know, that's a historic building and whatnot, you know, so they put new windows in. They updated the bathrooms. What else did they do? Oh, Mike, and I think it's still up, when you go up on the stage, oh, we had to put, like, a steel steps on the stage because there wasn't. Mike's mom and dad said years ago, many, many moons ago, they would use the town hall, and they would put on plays. Well, underneath that stage, we found, and they still might be there, I don't know, there were rolled up backdrops. And then a friend of ours, he came up, he was an electrician, he put a giant disco ball up there. I mean, all the time we were turning around, somebody was doing something. But the disco ball's gone, and it ticks me off. I'm like, where'd the disco ball go? It was huge. Matter of fact, it used to be over in the Marion roller rink. And so that, you know, but yeah, and then Mike and I, we built that little booth back there where we run the music, and we made it look like a Craig 8-track player, you know, a 8-track stereo. And we went to the dollar store and got the plastic buckets and painted them silver and made them look like knobs. That was right up my alley. We played, well, anything from the 80s, but, you know, when we got slack from parents, like, you know, we didn't do Nirvana, which Nirvana's nothing now, but back in the day, you know, we didn't do any heavy metal. We didn't do any Guns N' Roses. Top 40 is what we did. New Kids on the Block, and, you know, the kids go nuts, and we did all that. That's what's funny right now. My oldest grandson, I have two, they're in England, and Noah is turning 15. And of course, my girls, especially Megan, is a theater major, and Megan's in, you know, Megan was doing the raves and everything else. And so Noah's into this, "Mom, do you know who Tupac is? And Mom, do you know who?" She's, and she starts singing the lyrics, and she goes, "That is so embarrassing." It's crazy, but yeah, we just anything. I had so much music, cassettes and different things, and I ended up when my girls were done with school and Meg started going to college, I was done. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see the change in kids. I could see the no fear, no respect. It was just a whole different era. And I thought, no, I can't do this because I'll end up in an orange jumpsuit. Like I said, Sari graduated 1999. Meg was 97. And we stayed for a bit. But I could see the change. I could see. And then I thought, is it them changing or is it me changing? You know, I love kids, obviously, but you know, I just thought, I don't know about this. I always said, you know, when they came out with that No Fear, I think they're all going by that. Yes, I can say what I want to say. Well, sorry, you don't know Binky Lion too well, because no, you can't. The reason that it ended was, like I said, the village was backing us. But then when we got a new mayor, Dan Slosher, he was a consultant, and he started going, you know, checking things, and he came to Mike and I and said, you know, that the village would no longer pay the insurance, that, you know, like, have the insurance for the building, you know, there could be some lawsuits or whatever with the kids, and then laid out a price, and there was no way. And so we were like, you know, and of course Mike was like, later. And I'm like, oh, wait, you know, because I'm thinking of the kids, you know, and that. But it was very sad, very, very sad. Yeah, we're just kind of like, later, dude. No, we said, you know, I think I was the spokesperson, and I got up and said this would be the last, you know, and things are changing, and, you know, you guys are getting older, and blah, blah, blah. And, no, you know, and then I had some parents say, well, I can do it. And I was like, well, sit down with me and let me tell you exactly what I do. I'm working 8 hours a day plus doing this, you know, and this is like nonstop. It ran its course, honestly, you know. You know, the other thing that we would do too is like during, we'd have a huge Halloween party. Yes, they would dress up. We had bean bag pumpkin toss. And, I mean, it was also stuff from the school. The games that the schools would have, and they brought those and let us borrow those. I mean, it was just amazing. And we'd have the Halloween party and the Christmas party. 250 kids. Marion, I remember they were trying to put it together. And of course, you know me, you're not calling it Fantastic Friday. So the freshman building on Church Street, they thought that they would try, you know, as an older gym, it was an old gym. And I thought, well, that'd be a great place, you know. But then when I went to some meetings and I sat down and told them how it was, they're like, whoa, that's a lot. I don't know. I don't know if we could get someone to faithfully, you know, like do that. I don't think they realize the extent of the work that, you know, the legwork and what would, I mean, you know, you think about it, we had to get cleaning supplies. The bathrooms had to be, you know, up to par. You know, like I said, rest her soul, and I miss her terribly, Eileen and I, we spent hours up there, but we love, I turn the sound system on and we clean, you know, but, you know, we were just blessed, let me just say that. Well, you know, the other thing, too, once school was out, you know, the kids were busy with baseball or doing whatever, a couple times I made the announcement and I set everything up and we had it outside in the square. So the kids could be outside. I did it that way in the summer one time. There was talk. You know, I had a lot of people talking about what they wanted to do and that, but it never, and you know, I don't know. I don't know if it was Mike and I were go-getters. You know, I don't know what it was. And like I said, maybe it was them putting their foot in front of them and going, whoa, that's a lot of work, you know? So I don't know. It was important to me. I think it was because of my upbringing. Family's very important, you know? And like I said, with music, I saw these kids. I talked to all these kids, especially the ones that didn't have anything. And it just gave me that drive to give them a place to go. You know, we lost a teenager from an accident and out on Cemetery Road. And that was devastating. These are the, I don't want to say low income, but you know what I mean. And, you know, these kids didn't have a lot, and this boy in particular didn't. And he was one of them that I got off the street and that would come every week and help. And so that was devastating to me that, you know, that happened to him. And we even went to the extent of where we got his tombstone and everything. Yeah, that was my focus. Me working at that store, getting my eyes open of having a child come in smelling like kerosene, because that's how they had to heat. Some of them not having coats. Bet you they got coats. You know what I mean? Yeah, there was a lot. And then we also did around the holidays of where we put this giant box, and if you could bring a can of food, we'd put all the food, all the cans of food, and take them over to the Salvation Army or the food banks. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Everybody's kids was our kids back in the day, you know. If something was going on and you know, we'd say, hey, you know, make sure, blah, 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 and we didn't want him to do, you know, and they'd say, you take care of it. You're like his mom, you know, or whatever. Computers, you know, video games, what was it? We weren't really Legion people, you know what I mean? Mike and I, we were never like nightclub people or hanging at the bars or anything. We just kind of kept to ourselves and the girls. And no, we really weren't involved in, he was involved in council and stuff like that. But no, we weren't involved. He was one of the original members of the Harley Riders in Marion. Right. Oh yeah, that's that Harley club that they have out on Lynn Hitcher. They actually have their own club out there. Yeah, there's a clubhouse. It used to be where they used to it used to be the Hunters Club or something out there, and they have ham shoots and all that stuff. But yeah, there's a Harley. It's the Marion Area Harley Motorcycle Club out there. Mostly in the latter 70s, Mike and I were motocrossing quite a bit, and everybody around here were doing motocrossing, dirt bike racing. And then in the 80s, of course, the Harley kind of come to a standstill, and then they took off again. Yeah, Mike's got three. I got one bike and that, so. My focus was getting the kids in and out, you know? And the pizza places were going, and I mean, it wasn't a complete standstill, but it was slowing down. It had kind of was at a standstill, and then Riley Palmer, I think his name was, made it a Harley shop, a repair shop. That was there for quite a while. And then he sold it, and trying to think. He sold it. Well, he renovated the upstairs. He made apartments upstairs. Did you know on Water Street, across from the Camo, on the opposite corner, across from Carol's new dance thing. That used to be a bar years ago. The Corner Inn. My house was the happening house when my kids were in high school. No. My dream was always to get a one-story building, because you know those steps of carrying that equipment and that up. I always wanted a pole barn or some kind of brick building. You know, I was thinking of Glengarry Brick. And that's where Mike retired. Mike worked 40-something years at Glengarry Brick.
Wow.
Always wanted I always thought it would be nice to have a building, you know, for the seniors, you know, playing their bunco or whatever the senior people want to do. Not that I'm a senior, but, you know, and if they wanted to have some kind of a gathering with kids in that, I always thought it would be cool to have like a clubhouse for the kids. Could be like a community center. I don't really have a building in my, well, that's a lie. I thought at one point with the bank, where they took the bank, but then I didn't want that. My thing is, I would like them to take the daggone Camo Cafe down. I hate that they'd have to take that building down, but it's really bad. I thought if they could take that corner and take part of the bank and maybe build something one story there, like a community thing. But then I get all weirded out because the Camo's behind it, you know. But I always thought it would be nice to have a piece of land that they're in the village, where you really weren't messing with the historical part of it. I mean, I even thought Carol's Corner, you know, the building that they don't use, maybe you could put something up there. And I always thought where her building was at, that's kind of centralized in the square, you know, that they could have like a community thing right there. That's the whole thing. I just wanted to keep them busy, you know, keep them out of trouble. And I was like a therapist at the store. They'd come in and talk to me, you know. And with Carol, I would do her backdrops for her dance reviews, and that would help pay for my girls' dance classes and stuff. And you know what's really sad is I have not done hardly anything. The last thing I did, and it's been quite a while ago, Mike and I were really big into stained glass, and we were doing a lot of stained glass projects, but at Christmas, I had taken a glass block and I mosaicked some stained glass on this glass block and gave it to my sister for Christmas. And she's like, "Oh, I can't believe that you're back at it again." And I said, "I don't know how long, but yeah, I did this." And my girls are the same. My Sari and Meg. Oh, and Mike's mom was a wonderful artist. I mean, this woman, she was incredible. I could sit and talk to you for days about her. She was just amazing. But they've got, and Mike's a good artist too. And my girls had, thank God, had picked this up, and they're very creative. It's amazing. It's amazing. Eileen Hess was my best friend, and she was one of them with the backbone of Fantastic Friday. And Kevin Landis, he was our youngest one. And I talked to him last night. I texted him and was asking him about different things. And he said this to me, and it has stuck. I thought it was really neat. And he said he was so sad when we did close it. And I said, yes, everyone was. But he said to me, almost a full generation grew up going up there with you guys on Friday nights, learning how to act properly in public. Is that not something? And you know, the other thing I think with forming what we did was everybody knew each other. Everybody knew their kids, you know? So it was like kids that would come up and say, "Oh, don't tell my dad. I know you know him. He'll kill me." You know, stuff like that. But we meant business, and they knew we meant business. And the thing of it is one night this kid come up and he was crying. You know, we had the older kids and he just started driving. So proud that he got a truck, you know. And he come up and he's crying. I'm like, whoa, what's the matter? And he said, such and such slipped my tire. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. I said, you know that for a fact. I think the thing of it, too, was the fact that we listened, you know, what they would say. Making the story of where I'm going with this, we did know who did it, and this boy had to get up on the stage in front of everyone and apologize. Now, I'm thinking today, I probably would have got shot or stabbed. Yeah. And like I said, Mike and I would shop, or I'd be shopping, and I'd have someone come up, and they'd say with their girlfriend, wife, and kids, this lady right here, she turned my life around and kept me off the streets. And I'm like, well, you have a child, so I'm old. Yeah. But yeah, they would say that. Or I have a girl here in the village, and she said to me, and she's a physical therapist, and she had a rough childhood, and she said to me, one night I was talking to her, and you know, I'm always taking somebody under my wing, and she said to me, I just want you to know that that night I was upset with my mom, one of those nights. And you sat there on that bench, because we had park benches around inside the town hall, too, and picnic tables. And she said, you sat there and you listened to me and you looked at me and you said, you know what? You can do anything you want to do. And you are smart. And if you're going to make something of your life. And she said, you know what? That's what got me through everything. And that's where I'm at today. I'm like, oh, jeez. I know. I'm like, what? What? I mean, you don't realize the impact that you have on people, you know? I'm terrible because I don't give myself credit for nothing. And, you know, I hear things, and I'm a big jokester, you know? I got to make a joke out of everything. But when I hear stuff, I crumble. I just always tried to keep it on their level. Yeah. Oh. And the kids would say, hey, my mom doesn't want me. Can you play Guns N' Roses? I said, come and see me in the sound booth after. And we'll jam, dude. We'll jam. Hey, we were it.